Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you, and for our new faces, nice to see you as well. I'd like to concentrate this morning and in my teaching on a verse from our parsha, a very well-known parsha by Yishlach. It contains many stories. But it opens up with these words, Vayira Yaakov me'od v'yetzel lo v'yachatz et ha'am asher ito v'tatzon v'bakar. And Yaakov was greatly frightened in his anxiety, and he divided the people with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two camps. And then he says later on, he says, Hatzileni na miyad, achai, achislicha miyad, esav ki yare anochi oto, pen yavo v'hakikeni im al. Banim, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, else I fear he may come and strike me down, mothers and children alike. So I'd like to concentrate today on this emotion of fear. And while doing the research for this, I realized that there's quite a bit of fear in both Buddhist sources and Jewish sources. So remember the context of this story, which leads to that very famous encounter with so-called man, which changes his name from Yaakov to Yisrael. He has spent 20 years away. He had left home after, quote-unquote, taking the blessing of his brother for his own. And his mother tells him to get out of town because Esav is going to kill him. So he indeed puts discretion before valor and goes back to the family homestead, which was customary in order to find a wife. And, of course, we know that story was talked about over the last couple of weeks. But what is now the issue is the confrontation. Coming home, he also has to confront Esav, his twin, and warn to kill him. So the question, obviously, is that Jacob is in the grip of strong emotions. But a lot of people concentrate in the commentary, which is very common for rabbinic commentary, of why is there these two words, Vayira, and he feared, and he was afraid. And then it's followed by this two words, Vayetzer lo, which is usually seen as distress. And they say, well, is this a repetition or not? Vayira, to fear, and to be distressed. And the rabbis, in their desire to put Yaakov in a very positive light, which they do with all of the patriarchs and matriarchs, says that the first one, afraid, is for his physical safety. And the second is a fear of an attack on his morality. So they say the first fear is a fear of his body. The second, the fear that he might kill someone else. It's not very obvious in the text, but clearly the rabbis play on this idea that basically he was of such character that his fear was not only for his own physical safety, but the fact that he might reach out and cause injury to others. Now, the idea of fear is in the Jewish tradition talked about, and often it is submerged under this idea of Yirat Hashem, the fear of God. And remember, in Hebrew, the word fear, Vayira, is akin to the word revere or awe. So remember that it says, you know, by Yira, you should have awe or respect or reverence. So fear of God, Yirat Hashem, is not the fear that God will somehow hurt or punish, but rather it's a state of extreme awe, a form of higher consciousness, that you stand before the creator of heaven and earth at every moment. And it is the fear of being torn away from that state of being. Actually, a better translation would be awe and separation anxiety. When a person finds him or herself in a fearful situation or dealing with a personal phobia, this is the best strategy. Awaken within yourself a true sense of awe and fear of the only one there is to awe and fear. Any other fear will vaporize Rabbi Beckerman says in a quote from the Chabad, once there is awe and fear, any other fear will vaporize like a drop of water in the hot sun. And it goes on and says that one of the ways, and we find this both in Buddhist and in Jewish sources, is to confront the fear. Confront the fear. Face the fear. And the way we, in our group here for over the years, we, of course, take the idea of entering a higher consciousness by basically being in the moment. And being in the moment should, in some way, counteract our fears. Now, fears are also created by old habits, by old ideas that we fall in. We fall into these old habits, and these habits are habits that had maybe established from childhood, from trauma, etc. So the Dalai Lama, being brought to us in the words of Thupten Chodron, who's a wonderful head of one of the academies, says fear is an emotion that can be spoken of in two ways. In common parlance, fear is usually associated with panic, anxiety, worry, and distress. It is considered a negative emotion because it feels so unpleasant. It is often based on unrealistic thinking. I think that's a very important thing to take in, unrealistic thinking. And from a Buddhist viewpoint, this kind of fear is afflictive because it is based on exaggeration and self-preoccupation, and it leads a person to engage in actions or make decisions that are unwise. Another kind of fear has an element of wisdom. It is the awareness of possible danger that causes us to exercise caution. While this fear may sometimes feel unpleasant, it is useful and is free from the emotional torment of ordinary fear. For example, awareness that you live in an area that is prone to earthquakes encourages people to make and heed building codes to protect buildings from collapsing. People lay careful plans, take precautions without being immersed in uncontrollable panic. And this wisdom fear is also at work when we merge onto a highway, aware of the danger of other vehicles traveling at high speed. So we drive carefully. And parents instill in young children a respectful fear of matches or crossing the street unaccompanied. And in the above examples, fear is useful and not afflictive. So the difference the children tells us between afflictive fear and wisdom fear is the presence or absence of exaggeration. When we are attuned to facts of the situation, fear is not distorted. But when we exaggerate some aspect of the situation, fear is unrealistic and leads to suffering. And certain meditations in the stage of the path are designed to arouse wisdom fear within us. And when we meditate on the disadvantages of cyclic existence, wisdom fear motivates us to practice the path to liberate ourselves from samsaric suffering. Meditation on death is meant to provoke not an emotional panic, fear of death, which is of no benefit at all, but a wise awareness that our mortality that leads us to set good priorities in life, abandon harmful actions, and live ethically and kindly. The Buddha himself says that all beings feel a deep sense of fear or anxiety, which stems from the fact that we resist the impermanence of our existence. Partly because of this reality that fear is accepted as an innate aspect of the human experience, any person who wishes to awaken is considered a warrior, someone who battles this anxiety. All through Buddhist teachings, there's the idea of frightening. You can't con fear, Trungpa told us, or frighten fear. You have to respect fear. You might try to tell yourself that it's not real, that it's false, but such an approach, he says, is questionable. It is better to develop some kind of respect, realizing that neurosis is also a message rather than garbage that you would just throw away. The whole starting point for working with fear and other emotions is the idea of samsara and nirvana, confusion and enlightenment being one. Samsara is not regarded as a nuisance alone, but it has its own potent message that is worthy of respect. So in many ways, I'll just try to summarize it. So many sources that I found, particularly there's a wonderful book by Thich Nhat Hanh called Fear, Essential Wisdom for Getting Through the Storm, which I really recommend it. It's a wonderful book. So he says the only way to ease our fear and be truly happy is to acknowledge our fear and look deeply at its source. Instead of trying to escape from our fear, we can invite it up to our awareness and look at it clearly and deeply. And when we recognize, he continues, that we have a habit of replaying old events and reacting to new events, this is very, very important, as if they were old ones, we begin to notice when that habit energy comes up. We can then gently remind ourselves that we have another choice. We can look at the moment as it is, as a fresh moment, and leave the past for a time when we look at it compassionately. So fear keeps focused on the past or worried about the future. If we can acknowledge our fear, we can realize that right now we are okay. Right now, as we sit together today, we are alive. And our bodies, I hope, are working well. And our eyes can still see the beautiful sky. And our ears can still hear the voices of our loved ones. So in the story of Jacob, it goes on and says that after he does all of this strategy of how to protect himself and his family, etc., by creating two camps in case one is attacked, the other will be able to escape, he also begins this process of trying to figure out how is he going to deal with his brother Esau. He doesn't know what the future is. He sends messengers to Esau with gifts in order to sort of, if you will, ease the way when they do meet. And messengers come back and saying, Esau is coming, and he has 400 men with him. Well, this, of course, brings his level of fear even stronger. And after separating the camps, he remains by himself, it says. Livado, by himself. And a man wrestles with him. And in the wrestling, the man dislocates his hip, but Jacob is able to overturn him and get and hold him down and saying, and the guy said, let me go. And he says, well, I can't let you go until you give me a blessing. And the blessing is that from now on, you will be not only Jacob, but you will also be Israel, someone who struggles, wrestles with God and is with God and man and is victorious. So what's going on here? What's happening? What is this encounter about? And of course, the tradition says, well, it's an encounter with an angel, the angel of Esau. It's an encounter. But however, I believe what it is his encounter with his own fear, as we just said earlier, as a way of overcoming fear. And he wrestles with it. He wrestles it. And what happens at the end when he says, I will call this place the place where I saw God face to face. It is in that encounter that he establishes a new self-confidence. He no longer stays with his fear, which of course is based upon previous experience. But he's now saying my fear no longer is controlled by the past, but it's by the moment in which I encountered, in his sense, God, and having Yirat Hashem, the fear of Hashem. So that's my take on fear, is that the encounter with fear is a useful tool because it ultimately could lead to a new establishment of self-confidence. And in that self-confidence, Jacob is able to continue the strategy of how to quote-unquote apologize or even use the word appease Esav, and then we get a very elaborate and dramatic description of how the encounter takes place. And of course, there is a sense of reconciliation, which often is not talked enough about because people seem to want to dwell on the enmity and not on the reconciliation. So facing our fears, that's really a very, it sounds easy, but it isn't. One of the things Thich Nhat Hanh also, my wife and it works with a system called internal family systems as a psychologist. which is called parts work. And I found it very fascinating that Han really captures that and understands that. And he says, you have to let, he says, your parts to have a conversation, that you want your adult self, your adult part, to be able to sort of calm down the child part of ourselves, and saying, you don't have to fear. You don't have to fear. You better to develop a certain level of conversation, telling him that you are now protected. You are now protected. That the moment that I'm living in now, you will basically gives you an opportunity to not fall back into your fear. And this is what we do. And when we sit together, Michael Liebenson Grady, who was very active in insight meditation, he says, cultivating wisdom in working with fear requires gentle perseverance in being awake to what is. And this is quite different from trying to conquer fear. The practice of Vipassana reveals directly the arising and passing of all experience, including fear. Though this practice of moment-to-moment attention, we begin to understand fear on deeper levels than the personal. A helpful investigative tool, he says, is mental noting, making a soft, it's very important, soft mental note when experiencing fear can increase our ability to recognize and acknowledge the experience of fear. And this is a big step to take because so much of our experience of fear goes unacknowledged. We submerge it. We distract ourselves from it. As a matter of fact, if you look at the Jacob story, it is when he closes his eyes that this trauma arises from his past. And he had reason to have trauma because of fear. And yet in the wrestling with it, he indeed opens his eyes and sees, as he did at the beginning of his journey, if you recall, he has the dream of the ladder. And when he opens his eyes, he says, oh, ma no ra ha makom hazeh. Wow, how fabulous is this place? How fabulous is this place? And this, of course, this place means how fabulous is it to be here now, alive, and being able to enter into this sense of contemplation and a sense of being somehow alleviating the fear that we have. So there's quite a bit, of course, and of course, what I didn't find, however, in my looking for Buddhist sources, is a direct equivalent to Yirat Hashem. There's no solution like taking refuge in the Buddha. That is not what they say, because in their atheistic thing, one does not have a Yirat Hashem, a fear of God. Now, what we, of course, in our language that we use a lot at this in our sangha here, in our community, is that instead of God, which is a word which doesn't mean much in English, doesn't mean much, we use the unfolding of being. So if you have a sense of awe, yira, of the unfolding of being, that you can actually see in the everyday moment, what Rabbi Heschel used to call radical abasement or astonishment, we are able to somehow liberate ourselves from fears that are a product of our past experiences, which are not the experiences that we have right now. So I learned a lot from this week, because a lot of us, myself included, operate a sense of fear, particularly in the current political climate. We are afraid mostly, as I would say, at my age, mostly afraid for my kids and my grandkids about what are they going to be confronting in the years to come. And yet I have to be grateful about seeing them in the now and not necessarily being overcome with fear for their future. Because first of all, we are no longer in the past. And as you know, we have no idea what the future will bring. So we have to basically try to create a break of seeing what is now and necessarily fear. Okay, I'll leave it to you guys to make comments. If you'd like to, just unmute yourself and speak. And If many of you unmute at the same time, which usually does not occur, we will make sure that everybody gets a chance to speak. So thanks for paying attention to my ruminations. He's chewing it over again and again, like a cow does, right? We ruminate. And that rumination brings, hopefully, to something more substantial when it leaves your mouth. Okay.